love espresso, drip coffee, and cold brew? With the Ninja Luxe Cafe, if you can crave it, you can brew it. Espresso? Balanced. Drip coffee? Rich. Cold brew? In a flash. With Barista Assist technology, you brew with no stress and no guesswork. And make perfect silky microfoam hands-free from dairy or plant-based milks. Bring the coffee house home and unlock your favorites with the Ninja Luxe Cafe.
At Arizona State University, we're bringing world-class education from our globally acclaimed faculty to you. Earn your degree from the nation's most innovative university, online. That's a degree better. Learn more at asuonline.asu.edu.
Hey, I'm Steph, and this is Not Today. Hello and welcome. Before we jump into the story this week, I wanted to remind you that bonus episode number 43 came out last week, which was the story of Melissa and Alyssa Oxley. On February 21st, 2008, Melissa Oxley frantically called 911 after finding the dead body of her husband Ben lying next to her in bed. Ben had been shot in the head with a shotgun and killed in his sleep, so Melissa hid with her 6-year-old stepdaughter Alyssa as they waited for authorities. After police arrived, they searched for an intruder but found nothing, and all evidence seemed to be pointing to Melissa as her husband's murderer. However, 6-year-old Alyssa always knew her stepmother was innocent, and what she saw that night would change the course of the investigation. Their story is unbelievable, so if you're interested in hearing that, you can find it at patreon.com/nottodaypodcast. We release one new full-length bonus episode every month that our patrons get to vote on, and there are 42 other bonus episodes out now as well, and it's only $5 a month, so really it's a steal if you ask me. But today, we'll be talking about Samantha Stites. Her story is probably one of the most, if not the most, terrifying stalker story I've ever come across. I found this story very recently from a Hulu documentary called Stalking Samantha, and I had to talk about it because this story is unreal. She was stalked for over a decade, for starters, but what she went through is like something out of a horror movie. Like, truly, her stalker was inspired by Joe Goldberg from the TV show You, but also, she is such an incredible, strong woman who overcame so much and wants to share her story to help others, which I think is amazing. So let's just jump in because we have a lot to talk about. This story does contain discussion about sensitive topics, so listener discretion is advised. Samantha Stites grew up in Elk Rapids, Michigan. She grew up with not a lot of money. Her father left when she was 5, and her mother was a server and a bartender. And Sam figured out pretty early on that if she wanted to do something, she was going to need to do it on her own. She's been strong from day one. But that being said, it still seemed like she had a great childhood. She loved where she grew up. I mean, Northern Michigan is gorgeous, and she had great friends. And from what I could gather, it seemed like she was a kind and smart kid. In 2011, 18-year-old Samantha Stites started her college career at Grand Valley State University in Allendale, Michigan. Sam had grown up Christian, and religion was really important to her, so she joined a Christian group at a nearby church. She had no idea that joining that church would change her life forever. She met Christopher Thomas in 2011, when he joined the same Christian group as her. Christopher was older than her by around 6 to 8 years, so he would have been somewhere around his mid-20s. He was a socially awkward, kind of lonely guy, and Sam's first impression of him wasn't very memorable, but she kind of felt bad for him. She wanted to be welcoming and kind, so she would talk to him at events they were doing together. And I've definitely had interactions like this. I was a really empathetic kid, and I always wanted everyone to feel included, especially someone who was maybe a little bit socially awkward, because I knew what it felt like to be left out, and I didn't want anyone to feel that way. So I would have done the same thing that Sam did. And I think most people probably would have. She was just being nice. And one day, he friended her on Facebook. Christopher messaged her on Facebook saying he had a question for her. At first, she thought he must just be lonely. And for some reason, Sam thought she must seem like an approachable person to talk to. But then things changed. He started asking her out on dates, if she had time between classes for him, if she wanted to grab lunch with him. and Sam would always politely turn him down in a way that let him down easy, like saying she was busy, and just hoped that he would get the hint that she wasn't interested, but he never did. Before her birthday, he physically approached her out of nowhere and told her he knew her birthday was coming up and wondered if she wanted to go to a Red Wings game with him. He got them tickets, and then he pulled them out. Sam was speechless and very caught off guard. She knew at this point she had to be more direct with him and told him she wasn't interested in going to a Red Wings game with him. There wasn't anything wrong with him, she just didn't have any romantic interest in him. She hoped that now that she had actually said those words out loud, he would stop trying to get her to go out with him. Maybe he truly was that oblivious and didn't pick up on the many, many times she tried to gently turn him down. But now she had done it in a way that didn't leave anything up to interpretation. But that didn't deter Christopher. He kept messaging her things and asking her to hang out. And as if that wasn't bad enough, he started calling her Jellybean. He put a few red roses under her windshield wiper and some more flowers at her doorstep with a weird love note. The messages were getting much longer and way more emotional. He started quoting Bible verses and saying things like their relationship was in God's plan. Each time, Sam would be clearer and clearer, telling Christopher that she was not interested in him, and eventually she told him he needed to back off. But no matter what she said, it continued throughout her entire 4 years of college. In March of 2014, Sam was 20 or 21, and it was her senior year of college. And one evening, she showed up at her job on campus, and she saw that Christopher was there with flowers in hand. He approached her and told her he heard that her grandfather had passed away. And that made her extremely angry. She told him she didn't want his flowers. "I don't want to see you or hear from you. Please leave me alone." He seemed very surprised that she wasn't flattered by his gesture. He left, but later on, while she was waiting outside in the cold at the bus stop, he approached her again with the flowers, and he said, "I just don't understand," but she cut him off. "I don't know what there is to not understand about this situation. I've told you multiple times over text, I don't want to see you. I don't want to talk to you. I've blocked you. Don't show up where I am. Leave me alone." It was the first time she felt like she had been so clear about what she wanted and someone so blatantly ignored what she was saying.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Hey, wake up! New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
Then Christopher started showing up at her frisbee practice. He would sit in the stands and watch. He didn't say anything to her, but he was clearly following her. She wanted to believe that this was some weird coincidence, but he wasn't a student at her school, so there was no reason for him to be there. She was just so sick of all of it, she wanted to do what she had to graduate and just get out of there. Things were obviously weird, but she felt like it was something she could deal with on her own. But it was also around that time Sam led a prayer meeting, and Christopher approached her afterward and told her that he quote-unquote saw red and beat someone up. Which I guess was his way of showing her not only was he a weird, socially awkward, and emotionally uneven guy, but he can also be physically violent, when pushed to a certain extent. Sam didn't want to accept this situation as potentially dangerous. Her friend said they just wanted to shake her and make her see it the way that they were. This wasn't a coincidence. This was dangerous. But finally, on April 26, 2014, Sam graduated, which she was very excited about. She planned to take a little time off after graduation, so she went home to Elk Rapids in northern Michigan. And it seemed like the Christopher chapter was finally behind her. Sam lived in an apartment with her childhood friend Carissa Hayden downtown, across from the local pub and above the Chinese restaurant, and their door was always unlocked. They said it was a really fun time, and it was a really safe area. Throughout the summer, Christopher messaged her a few times saying they needed to talk and expressed an interest in coming up to Elk Rapids to meet with her. When Sam showed Carissa these messages, they kind of just laughed it off and brushed them off because it seemed funny and kind of pathetic that he just wasn't getting it. He became a running joke between Sam and her friends. They didn't in a million years think he'd become the villain in their story. And I could see how Sam wouldn't be so concerned at this point. Sure, he was extremely weird and had agitated her a lot while she was at school because he wouldn't leave her alone, but she's not considering him like a full-on stalker at this point. She's just thinking he's a weird guy who's a little bit obsessed with her, but she's not considering him a threat at this point. And she's graduated, she's left school, and now she's probably somewhere around 3 hours away from her campus. I don't know where Christopher lives, but he's definitely not living in Elk Rapids. So I'm sure Sam thinks she's washed her hands of this whole situation. She gets to move on with her life. And this is just some like weird blip in her story that she gets to laugh about with her friends. Unfortunately, that wouldn't be the case. Sam decided she was going to take a year off to explore her faith a bit more and was accepted for a ministry internship in Kansas City, which she was really excited about. 2 days before she left to go to Kansas City in September of 2014, Sam and Craig Mosier, who was a family friend and father figure to her, were running some errands together when they noticed there was a red motorcycle that was maybe following them. And Sam's heart sank because she knew who it was. She had no idea how he found them. She wasn't even in her own car, so how did he know where they were? She told Craig what was going on, so Craig pulled over to confront Christopher, but Sam said no, she would do it. She got out of the car and approached him and asked him, "Why are you in my town? I've asked you to leave me alone. What are you doing here?" He told her he had applied for the same internship that she had, and he was accepted. Could she possibly give him a ride out there? Sam was stunned and deflated. Her ministry internship was something she had been looking forward to for so long, and now it felt like it had been ruined. And this was when Christopher went from feeling pathetic to feeling kind of sinister. He was following her for real. Sam was scared she would never be free of him. And Craig knew this was a problem, so he and Sam sat down around his kitchen table to figure this out together, because he can see that this situation is potentially dangerous for her. And while they were talking, Craig's son Josh came home and told Sam that someone had been looking for her. Sam asked who it was, and Josh told her he wasn't sure, he didn't recognize the guy, which is when she pulled out a picture of Christopher. Josh confirmed that it was him and told her that he spotted Christopher coming out of Sam's apartment. That was when it really sunk in just how dangerous things were becoming. He had driven multiple hours to come to her town, found out where she lived, and entered her home. Craig told Sam she needed to consider a personal protection order, or a restraining order, which kind of felt drastic at the time. Part of her still wanted to deal with this on her own, but at the same time, she knew there was nothing she could do to make him stop. Craig had Sam sit down and write down all the things that he had done up until that point to show her how many things he had actually done. And once she did that, the threat became a lot more real to her. Up until that moment, there had been so many little weird things that he had done, and she had written them off. But looking at it all together, it was really sinister. She thought through the past 2 or 3 years and wrote down all of their interactions. And that was the first time that she laid out each interaction with him in such a way that showed without a doubt that he was stalking her. And even though Sam had lived through all of it, she was shocked. So she compiled all of that evidence and submitted it with a request for a personal protection order against Christopher Thomas. And on September 18th, 2014, Family Division Judge Norman Hayes received this case, and he had 24 hours to review it and decide to either grant it or deny it. As he read through everything, he became increasingly more concerned. He had never seen a stalking case as severe as this. Christopher was clearly obsessed with this young woman, and Norman Hayes felt like it was only a matter of time before he was going to do something like rape, kidnap, or kill her. He said, quote, if you looked up stalker in the dictionary, there would be a picture of Christopher. So he granted the personal protection order for 6 years, which at the time was the longest personal protection order he had ever issued. He was hoping that would allow her to start her life over away from that creep. And I think that is extremely telling because although I've already listed so many very concerning things that he's done, getting a PPO or restraining order isn't always the easiest thing to do. And to get one for 6 years means that there was a lot that she had to be concerned about. After Sam was granted the PPO, Craig called the director of the prayer ministry in Kansas City and explained the situation to him, and thankfully they revoked his spot in the program, which was a huge relief to Sam. It seemed like this nightmare was finally over and she could breathe once again. Her plan was to pack her car and to drive off into the sunset. And after that, things were actually really great for her. She went to graduate school and trained as a private practice therapist. She had friends who were interested in what she was doing along the way, so she began writing a blog. And there was a woman named Sarah Mott that began commenting on her blog. And Sam thought that it was really cool that people were interested in what she was doing who weren't even in her life. And spoiler alert, Sarah Mott is not some kind-hearted woman who is interested in Sam's journey. It was Christopher. But I feel like we could have guessed that one. Sam did not, because she was living her life, and why would she have thought that? But even though it seemed like Christopher was leaving her alone, he was not actually leaving her alone. After school, Sam moved back to Michigan, up to Traverse City, actually, since she missed home. A lot had changed in her life. Her mother and grandmother had both passed away, and it was a really tough time for her. She had lost some of the most important people in her life, and she was craving something familiar. But as hard as that was for her, she was also really proud of herself. She was 28 years old, she had become a social worker, and bought a house, and dove into doing a bunch of home improvement projects. She felt like a true grown-up, and was putting down roots, which felt really good. She joined an adult recreational soccer league, which she loved since she was always very passionate about soccer, so things were looking up for her. But then on September 18th, 2020, Sam's PPO expired. The 6 years had passed. As Sam was arriving at one of her soccer games, she saw Christopher standing there on the field looking back at her, and she stopped dead in her tracks. He looked different. He had lost a lot of weight, but there he was. When Sam first met Christopher, he was kind of overweight and seemingly harmless and just kind of an awkward guy. But it seemed to Sam's former roommate, Carissa Hayden, after seeing him all those years later, that he had been training for something. At least that's how it felt. She had no idea what he was doing there. Sam obviously didn't want to interact with him, but she also didn't want to let her team down and just leave because he was there. Part of her wanted to believe maybe he was a completely different person now. But she was definitely shaken up the entire game. It was strange. He hadn't spoken to her, or even acknowledged her, the entire time. She had no idea what to make of that. After leaving that day, she went home and found her PPO, which was when she saw that it had expired. I can't imagine that moment, pulling out that document that you probably haven't looked at since you got it, thinking that your life is finally free and started and good, and then it all comes to a screeching halt when he's standing there waiting for you, as if he's been waiting for you the entire time. And she didn't want to believe that. She was probably going through a million different mental gymnastics to get around that thought, to think that this was some crazy coincidence that he ended up back in the same place that she was, because it had been 6 years. Surely he couldn't possibly be still obsessed with her. That would be crazy. But also he's done some really crazy things in the past. So she was going to proceed with caution. At this point, the only place she had seen him was at soccer, so she was hoping it would stay that way. She began intentionally switching up her routine when it came to soccer, parking in different places or catching rides with friends. But not long after that, Sam arrived early to soccer and her kayak was on her car, which made her car very noticeable. Out of the corner of her eye, she saw Christopher walking toward her, and she saw his eyes on her. And Sam immediately felt like she had made a huge mistake, because now he knew what her car looked like, and he could get her license plate. She felt so stupid for not having gone to a friend's house to have them drive her. She felt like this was her fault for putting herself in this position. Which breaks my heart because this guy obviously already knows what her car looks like. He knows where she lives. He knows what she's doing with her time. He's been following her already. But now she thinks it's her fault. Christopher had also joined the soccer league that she was a part of. He wasn't on her team, but her team would play against his. And they couldn't get him out of the league because technically he wasn't doing anything wrong. He was just showing up and playing soccer. But Sam began seeing him while she was out again. While she was grocery shopping or while she was at the gym, but she tried to write it off, telling herself that it must have been a coincidence. Traverse City isn't a huge place. These are the places that people shop, or this is the gym that people go to. Her friends felt like she was being extremely naive and urged her to switch gyms and see the situation for what it was. She felt like she was going crazy because she was seeing him a lot. She had to learn to ignore him so she didn't completely lose her mind. He was everywhere, and he was ruining her passion, which was soccer, because he was always there. And he played extra aggressively with Sam. On one occasion, he raced her to the ball and was faster than her since he'd been working out a ton, so he beat her to it, and he turned around and looked at her and stuck his whole tongue out and made a face at her, and then, you know, ran with the ball. And Sam was furious. She felt like she would never be free of him, and it was devastating. He was becoming more and more aggressive, and his behavior had started to escalate. But at the same time, he wasn't even talking to her. He was just everywhere. Around that time, Carissa came back to Elk Rapids, so she and Sam planned to grab a drink and go to a pride event to see a drag show together. As soon as they sat down, Sam saw Christopher leaning against a pole only 15 feet away from them. And Carissa said Christopher isn't gay. He doesn't have any friends, let alone any friends who are gay, so there was no reason why he should be at the exact same place as them. She immediately wanted to leave, but Sam had had enough, so she said no. She wanted to sit there and enjoy a beer with her friend. He couldn't take everything from her. Finally, they finished their drink, and Carissa said, okay, we should go now, because she was feeling very uncomfortable. So they decided they would go back to Carissa's apartment and hang out on the rooftop to watch the sunset, and joked that if he followed them there, they would see him coming. So they go up onto the roof, they open a bottle of wine, and neither of them told the other, but they were both scanning for Christopher the entire time. And lo and behold, Carissa saw him scurry by the alleyway on the sidewalk below. And when she saw that, something flipped in her. She ran downstairs and screamed, "Christopher, what are you doing in Elk Rapids?" He made up some excuse about how he was drunk and he couldn't drive home, but she confronted him about how he was following Sam, which he of course denied, but she told him that if he came around here again, she would call the police, which scared him off for the night. And when I heard this part of the story, I could just imagine being there in that moment when they saw him and she just ran downstairs and started screaming at him. She said her entire body was shaking and she had so much adrenaline because she was so scared, and I can understand why. I mean, this guy is scary at this point. But also, she felt like there was nothing else she could do. She just wanted to protect her friend so badly. And I just wanted to, like, reach through the screen and high-five her because what a badass thing to do. I mean, he was not a small guy. He's a big guy, and Carissa didn't seem very big. I mean, she seemed like a pretty small woman, but still. She stood up to him, which I think is awesome. And I want to be clear, I do not think that Sam not standing up to him was wrong. I think she was doing what she had to make it through. She was obviously enduring a lot of emotional turmoil at this point, and probably didn't want to acknowledge what was happening, because once you acknowledge it, you make it real. She didn't want to call it what it was because she had to live with it. She was actively living with it every single day, and there wasn't like much she could do at this point. And in her mind, I think this was different than before because she felt like she didn't have enough evidence to get another PPO. So I don't think she really knew what to do. And I don't know how you would know what to do in this situation because this is already like over a decade of being stalked and harassed.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Hey, wake up! New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, ugh, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams, whew,
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
But Carissa and Sam's other friends and family were extremely concerned for Sam at this point. They told her that she had to get another PPO. They said they would all write reports for her, but like I said, she had a gut feeling that she didn't have enough evidence this time. They all thought Christopher was a psychopath and would do something. And a few friends suggested that Sam should get some protection, like a firearm or something. A friend had gotten her a Ring camera, and she said she had a hatchet under her mattress, which made her feel better. But other than that, she didn't know what else to do. Sam and her friends had no idea how Christopher had been able to show up literally everywhere she was, so they decided they should search Sam's car for a tracking device. They searched the entire thing, the outside, the inside, for a very long time, until their flashlights died, but they didn't find one. They didn't even know what they were looking for. So Sam decided it was time to try for another PPO. Which was when she got in contact with Devin Roberts, who was an assistant prosecutor, to help her, since she really didn't think she had enough evidence. After hearing about everything, Devin thought they should definitely try, and attached her previous PPO to show that there was a 6-year PPO, which was unheard of. Sam felt hopeful, especially because there was an assistant prosecutor helping her with the process, but a few days later she got the news that her PPO had been denied because it appeared they had a quote-unquote complicated relationship. Whatever that means. When asked to comment, the court said Sam had not alleged sufficient specific facts to show that immediate and irreparable injury would occur prior to a hearing, and that her ex parte PPO lacked a copy of the first order of protection. Which, according to Devin Roberts, wasn't the case because she said she attached a copy. But whatever the reason was, her second PPO was denied. Sam was apparently offered a hearing by the court, but she didn't pursue that because she feared that Christopher would become angry when he would be notified to attend. It's just crazy to me that her second PPO was denied. And it was when her second PPO was denied that Christopher began building his bunker. Friday, October 7th, 2022, at 7 a.m., Sam was in bed when she heard a noise. A squeak of a floorboard just outside her bedroom door, and she saw a shadow that wasn't normally there. Her heart immediately started racing, and her mind shot to the hatchet underneath her mattress. But before she could even move to get it, her door swung open and Christopher stormed in and jumped on her while she was in bed. She began screaming, hoping that someone would hear her. But as she screamed, he began choking her. As it became harder for her to breathe, Sam thought that he was going to kill her. Her mind was racing as she tried to figure out her next move. She continued screaming, but that got harder to do, and she thought about the reality that she may go unconscious, which would be really bad because then he would have complete control of her, which was when she had the idea to pretend to go unconscious. So she took a gasp of a breath and then held her breath and went limp. And then he let go of her. He bound her hands and feet with handcuffs, which was when she stopped this act of being unconscious and said to him, "If you want to rape me, just do it." He said, "I just want to talk to you." And she said, "I'm all yours. You have my attention." But then he told her, not here. He shoved a ball gag in her mouth and pulled out black gorilla tape and started putting it around the ball gag in her mouth and all the way around her head and hair multiple times. He then picked her up to carry her out of the room. She tried talking to him through the ball gag and the tape, saying anything she could to slow him down. She needed shoes. She was cold. She needed pants. He told her she didn't need that where they were going. He then walked her out to her car and put her in the back seat. Sam knew that once she left her house, the likelihood that she survived this would go down drastically. So she hoped anyone would see what was going on, but no one was outside. And that was when the fight for her life began. They started driving, but he stopped the car and asked her to lean forward and tied a bandana around her eyes so she couldn't see where they were going. But she knew the neighborhood, so she began counting the turns. When the car stopped again, she tilted her head down to try to look out the top of the bandana to get a glimpse of anything she could, and she managed to see a garage door. He backed the car into this garage space, and then the car came to a stop. Christopher got out of the car and then picked Sam up again. He took a couple of steps with her, then crouched, which was when Sam said she could smell lumber, and she could hear that they were in a more enclosed space. They went through another threshold, and finally, he set her down on a soft surface. When he took her bandana off, what Sam saw was like something out of a scary movie. She was in a tiny 7x7 room. The walls were covered in soundproof panels, and she could see that there were a few metal rings on the wall. She knew that this room was designed so that no one would be able to hear her scream. Christopher started ripping the tape from her mouth. Her lips were on fire from the tape, and her throat hurt from screaming. But the tape wouldn't come off all the way, and was keeping the ball gag in her mouth, so she asked him if he had a knife to get the tape off. She didn't want him to have a knife, but also she needed this thing off of her head, so he pulled out a knife and began cutting the ball gag off, and eventually he freed it from the tape. As she sat there, she said, "You want to talk? Then let's talk." Christopher told her, "Well, I didn't just bring you here to talk for the day. You're going to be here for 2 weeks." He told her he had taken some vacation time, and they were going to spend some time together. Sam internally started to panic and tried to hold back tears, and said, "Okay, what are we going to do for 2 weeks, Christopher?" He told her, "Well, I have a deck of cards." He started showing her what he had in there for them, like a water receptacle, a hot plate, some canned goods, a bin with peanut butter and jelly and crackers, and then he handed her a pair of black pajamas, which she put on because she didn't want to sit in her underwear. She asked him, "How are we going to use the restroom or clean ourselves?" And he gestured to a bucket in the corner and said he had a bathroom set up for them. Sam told him, "People are going to know that I'm missing." He told her that he would keep them occupied. He planned to take her paddleboard and leave it out on Lake Michigan and let people think that maybe she drowned, and that would keep them busy. Sam thought maybe they had a day before people started to raise eyebrows and wonder where she was. She worried about things getting tense in there and the possibility that maybe he would kill her. A million questions and possibilities flooded her mind. As her mind raced, Christopher told her he needed a minute, and then he left her in the room alone. And Sam was terrified. As scary as it was having him in the room with her, she was also terrified being alone in that silent room. She thought about the possibility of him just leaving her there. He was the only person who knew where she was. She thought she might die there, chained to that wall. Would she ever see daylight again? She prayed, but she was also angry. She thought to herself, hadn't she already been through enough? But even as angry as she was, she knew if she was going to survive this, it was going to be with her mind. Christopher was stronger than her and faster than her, so she needed to think if she wanted to live. Her best chance at survival was going to be staying calm with him. When he returned, she first heard the garage door open and then close, and then the outer door of the room open and close. She said to him, "Let's talk. If that's what you're saying you want to do, then let's do it." She told him she was a social worker. She could talk to him. He asked her about very specific things and specific dates. Like, for instance, when you were kayaking on this date, who were you with? Or what were you doing on Glen Lake 2 Thursdays ago? It seemed that Christopher already knew the answer to that last question and was testing her, so she answered him truthfully. And that was when he proudly revealed to her that he had a tracker on her car. He showed her the app on his phone that he used that sent him a notification anytime she left her neighborhood. He also told her he had trackers on her roommate's car and a few of her friends' cars, so if she went anywhere with anyone, he would know. She asked him how long he'd been doing that, and he told her maybe a year. She tried her best not to have a negative reaction to that statement. So her response to him was, "Oh, clever." She started asking him questions about the space that he had her in. Did he build it himself? He had, and he took pride in it. He told her he got the idea for this bunker from the TV show You. For those of you who are unfamiliar, the TV show You is a psychological thriller series that follows Joe Goldberg, a charming but dangerously obsessive man who becomes fixated on people he falls in love with. In the first season, and honestly I think all of the season, Joe kidnaps the woman he's obsessed with and locks her in a glass cage. He locks many people in this glass cage. And Christopher said he looked into doing a glass cage, but it wasn't logistically possible. So there's obviously so much wrong with that statement, that he was inspired by Joe Goldberg from You to build his bunker. Did he think he would get brownie points by telling her that? Because that's like a popular show that people enjoy. Did he think that she would be, like, flattered? Because people really romanticize Joe Goldberg? Or at least have in the past? Which is a crazy thing that happens with that show. At least in the early seasons. Definitely in the early seasons. Because he seemed far less outwardly crazy than he does in the later seasons. So women were actively obsessing over Joe Goldberg and almost calling him, like, goals. As if what he was doing was even slightly okay. As if he wasn't locking women in a glass cage and murdering them. Crazy. But there is just so much wrong with this man. I mean, obviously. I just wonder what he thought he was gaining by saying that. Did he think that she was going to equate him with Penn Badgley? Because Penn Badgley is like a good-looking actor who people adore. I don't know. This whole thing is so bizarre to me. And as if she wasn't scared enough, that statement made this scenario a lot scarier because he's obviously relating to this character. Joe Goldberg doesn't keep the woman he's obsessed with in his cage and then let her go and they live happily ever after. He ends up killing her. And Sam knows that. So now she's in this room with this guy who's been stalking her for 13 years, who's telling her that he is essentially Joe Goldberg. So she's trying not to freak out. And she's also trying to keep him calm. And she noticed little bees on the sheets. And she asked him if he did that on purpose because he knew her middle name was Beatrice. And he said, "Yeah, I know your middle name, and I thought they were cute." She felt like she was living in two different minds, or she had like a split personality, because she had to pretend to be unbothered by the situation she was in and act as if she was having some casual conversation or catching up with an old friend, but the other part of her was convinced that she was going to die. Christopher told her he wanted to talk about the time that he had revisited her for the first time at soccer after the PPO expired, which happened like 2 years before the kidnapping. He said, "You looked at me as if I were a monster, Sam." And he looked hurt by that. He told her he just wanted closure, and he just wanted to talk to her and clear the air. And she never gave him that chance. And seeing that he was being kind of vulnerable and showing his emotion, she proceeded with caution and said, "I'm sorry, I misread this whole situation." And she decided she was going to try to convince him that they could be friends, and what he's done up to this point isn't a big deal. And it seemed like he was starting to believe that. Or maybe he just wanted to revisit their history, because he told Sam he had something for her, and he pulled out a piece of clothing out of a tub. He said it might be kind of silly, but he kept it all this time. And he pulled out a Red Wings jersey with her last name on the back. He told her he had gotten it for her all those years ago when he invited her to a Red Wings game for her birthday, almost a decade prior. He told her he held on to the jersey even though they never made it to the game and he wanted her to have it. So she put on the best fake smile she could and she said, "Thank you. That's so thoughtful." And she put it on. She said, "Maybe after all this time we could go see a Red Wings game. Maybe we can be friends." And again, it seemed to be working because Christopher said he was sorry for what he did earlier that morning. He just felt like she would never talk to him unless he did something like that. She told him she would have. He had just never approached her, but she would have talked to him. Which of course wasn't true, but she had to play these mind games with him. She was saying anything she could to survive. And up until that point, he hadn't actually approached her and attempted to talk to her, which was a strategic move on his point to avoid another PPO, but she used that to say, well, you never tried to talk to me, but I would have talked to you. He had a moment where he told her he was terrified of prison and told her he would never survive there. He thought he could get into a lot of trouble for what he had done today, and he became panicked. He began to realize what he had done. Sam told him it wasn't too late to undo what he had done. So she brainstormed out loud and said, quote, well, maybe you don't have to go to jail for any of this. If you let me go tonight, I promise I won't go to the police. He told her he didn't believe her. She told him that she was a social worker, which made her very good at keeping people's secrets. But if this went on longer than tonight, they can't undo this because the police will come looking for her. Sam could tell that he was really considering what she had told him. And finally, he told her what would make him believe that she wanted to be his friend and keep his secret is if she would sleep with him. She told him he knew she didn't like him like that. She was seeing somebody, and she didn't want to sleep with him. He told her that was the only way he could really trust her with this. And then he said he needed some space. She really didn't want him to leave at that point because she knew she was so close to getting him to agree to letting her leave. But he left her in there once again. This was possibly her last real opportunity to be alone in this room and figure this out. So she began searching the room to see what else was in there. There wasn't anything sharp she could use to stab him with, and there wasn't a screwdriver to take the locks off the door. She had no way out. So she thought about her options. If she didn't give him what he wanted, who's to say he wouldn't rape her anyways? He could restrain her, and that would be worse. So she decided when he returned, if she couldn't get him to agree to let her go without sleeping with him, then she would if she could get him to promise her he'd let her go. When he returned, she asked him, "So what do you think? If I promise to not say anything, will you let me go?" But he doubled down and said the same thing. So she said to him, quote, "Do you promise if I sleep with you that you will let me out tonight?" And he told her, "I will." She made him shake her hand on it, which he did. She knew enough about him to know that his integrity was important to him, and she was banking on that. Sam was hoping that it would be quick, because he hadn't had a girlfriend in a long time, if ever. But then he told her he masturbated like 12 times a day, so this may take a while. He leaned in and kissed her, and she went dead inside. When the experience was over, he told her that was the only thing he had wanted for so long. She was the person he was supposed to marry. She told him she held up her end of the bargain. He needed to let her go. He told her, okay, he would take her back to the car, and he opened up the doors. When Sam walked out, she realized they were at the back of this storage unit complex, with woods next to them, and it was dark and cold outside. And she had a moment where she looked up at the sky because she thought she would never see the world again. When she walked around the car to get into the front seat, she saw her paddleboard in its backpack carrier, which was when she knew he was legitimately going to attempt to fake her death. During the short drive back to her car, she made some small talk with him. He pulled into the parking lot where he left her car, and when they got out to say their goodbyes, they hugged. Which is wild, but she had done it. And that hug, she said, felt like a victory. She had made it out alive. That just goes to show how strong she actually is. What a surreal moment. She's standing in a parking lot next to her car, being dropped off at it and hugging him, as if he's a friend and this is a normal interaction. She's had small talk in the car with him for the last few minutes. She talked her way out of a 7x7 bunker that he spent thousands of dollars to build in a storage unit for her, that he intended to spend at least weeks with her in, and very possibly would have killed her in. She's so smart, she's so powerful. It gives me full body chills to think of that moment. And just so impressive that she didn't crack the entire time, really. At least not enough to tip him off to what she was actually feeling. And she was able to get in her car and drive away. As if they were friends. Because she said, "We can be friends." And he believed her. That's incredible. Sam wanted to get herself immediately to the hospital, but since she knew Christopher had a tracker on her car, she just drove home. She needed someone else to drive her, so when she got home, she ran into her bathroom, locked the door, and called her neighbor, Melissa Shea. When Melissa answered the call from Sam that night, she immediately knew that something was wrong just by the sound of her voice. Sam sounded emotional and shaken up, which was not like her. She asked Melissa to come as soon as she could and get her, and when she does, park in her neighbor's driveway. And Melissa did not hesitate.
Hey, wake up! New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, ugh, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
If you love to travel, Capital One has a rewards credit card that's perfect for you. With the Capital One Venture X card, you earn unlimited double miles on everything you buy. Plus, you get premium benefits at a collection of luxury hotels when you book on Capital One Travel. And with Venture X, you get access to over 1,000 airport lounges worldwide. Open up a world of travel possibilities with the Capital One Venture X card. What's in your wallet?
Terms apply. Lounge access is subject to change. See CapitalOne.com for details.
Lowe's knows how to get you ready for holiday hosting with up to 35% off select home decor. And get up to 35% off select major appliances. Plus, members get free delivery, haulaway, basic installation, parts, and a 2-year Lowe's protection plan when you spend $2,500 or more on select LG major appliances. Valid through 10-1. Member offer excludes Massachusetts, Maryland, Wisconsin, New Jersey, and Florida. Installed by independent contractors. Exclusions apply. See Lowe's.com for more details.
As soon as Sam left her house to go to Melissa's car, she was terrified because she knew there was a good chance Christopher had followed her home, and she didn't know if he would want to kill her if he saw her trying to leave. When Sam got into Melissa's car, she told her they needed to get out of there right now. Melissa still didn't know what was going on, but she did as she was told. As they drove, Sam was panicked, looking in the rearview mirror, keeping an eye out for Christopher, as she explained that he had come into her bedroom that morning and attacked and kidnapped her. Melissa couldn't believe what she was hearing. Detective for Grand Traverse County Sheriff's Office Mike Matucci was called around 2:30 a.m. He had been working as a police officer for 19 years, and he specialized in sex crimes. When he heard about Sam's story, he did question whether or not it was actually true. It was such an unbelievable story. But as soon as he walked into the room, just seeing the look in Sam's eyes, he knew what she was claiming had actually happened. She was able to give so much incredible detail. He said she was probably the easiest interview he's ever had, as far as how much information she gave and how clearly she communicated. She talked about Christopher, the storage unit, where it was, how he built it, everything. He had to stop her in the middle a few times to call his supervisor to get detectives going on looking into Christopher, because they didn't know anything about him. On October 8, 2022, about 25 hours after the kidnap, a team of detectives was assembled to find Christopher, because they knew they had to find him as soon as possible. After Sam gave all the information she could, she called Assistant Prosecutor Devin Roberts to pick her up and bring her to her house. She needed somewhere safe to go. She still hadn't eaten or slept since everything happened, but she needed to contact friends and family who may be in danger, because he was watching them too, and she was worried about their safety. Meanwhile, police had obtained a search warrant for the storage unit, and they opened it to find this big wooden structure. They didn't know if he was hiding in the bunker, so they sent a canine in first. When they realized Christopher wasn't in there, they started their evidence collection. And it was exactly how Sam described it to them. They couldn't believe their eyes. The structure had sandbags and insulation all around it on the outside, as well as soundproof panels covering the inside. They also had a search warrant for Christopher's cell phone company, and with that they were able to get an approximate location of his phone. So they broke up into separate groups and began driving around the area. As Detective Sergeant Jared Bilichick started the search and drove down the first street, he looked down an alley and just so happened to spot the front of a black Cadillac CTS, which Sam had told them was the car Christopher drove. He thought to himself there was no way this was going to be this easy, but he circled around the block and came up behind the car, and sure enough, the license plate confirmed that it was Christopher's car. Sam had told detectives that Christopher made it clear he did not want to go to prison and would have a shootout with police if it came to it. He was into hunting and had a bunch of firearms in his home, so because of that potential threat, they determined it was time to call in the SWAT team. Their biggest concern was figuring out how they were going to get him out of that house. He lived above an elderly woman, so they really wanted to avoid a shootout with her in the mix. So they began devising a plan. As they began putting their SWAT team in place, someone from their surveillance team called over the radio and said they saw Christopher leaving his house. They had positioned patrol units in the area in case he left, and they had live updates as surveillance team watched him get into his car and begin driving away. So they needed to move very quickly. As he began driving away, four or five police cars descended on Christopher from both the front and the back, completely cornering him. Police had him at gunpoint, yelling at him to open the door and get out of the car, which he wasn't immediately doing. They didn't know what he would do. But finally, they got him to put his hands up, open the door, and they arrested him. The night Christopher was arrested, the police also executed a search warrant at his house, and they were able to get a lot of evidence from there because he didn't get rid of anything. They got the sheets from the bunker, they found the ball gag, the duct tape, the handcuffs, the receipts for the many GPS trackers he used, which only further verified everything Sam had said about Christopher and the extent which he was stalking her. They wondered if they had a psychopath on their hands. 36 hours after her kidnapping, Sam was notified that Christopher had been found and arrested, and she could return home if she wanted to. She felt a massive weight lifted off of her shoulders, knowing that she and her friends and family weren't going to be hurt by him. So she called her friend Robin to pick her up from Devin's house to bring her back home. And when they walked through the door, it was as if they walked into an active crime scene. Officers had been dusting for fingerprints and footprints, so there was dust everywhere, like a thick layer of black dust. And that's the thing about crime scenes. They come in and they, like, look for stuff, and they don't clean it up. So it was now up to Sam and Robin to clean up from the crime scene. And when that thick black dust gets wet, it's like paint. So they had to clean it up on their hands and knees with paper towels and mops and buckets and towels to get it clean, and it took a very long time. It was a horrible reminder that this trauma had taken place in her home, and that her home was never going to feel the same. Detective Matucci had the task of interviewing Christopher and verifying everything Sam had told him, because even with all of the evidence they had, this was still kind of his word against hers, so they needed to get him to talk. Christopher played dumb when detectives told him he was there because of Sam. He asked for her last name, which was when they told him it was Stites. When they asked what he was doing on Friday, he told them he was hunting. And when they told him they knew he wasn't hunting because they had him on CCTV footage from his storage unit, he got angry. He was mad at Sam because he had believed her when she told him that she wouldn't go to police and she would be his friend. They obviously knew what was in his storage unit, so he had to switch up his story. And he told them that it was kind of weird and personal. But it was role-playing gone too far. According to Christopher, it was a planned event where he was supposed to surprise her, but he overdid it and she didn't like the surprise. They just wanted him to keep talking, because the more he did, the more he verified, which was better for them. So they asked him if he ever saw the Netflix series You. And he said, possibly. But he didn't even have a TV, so they wouldn't be able to verify if he had or not, and he was really smug about it. He also described himself kind of a doomsday prepper. So he built the bunker as a way to hide out when the world went to hell. And the soundproofing was just insulation. They asked him what was the purpose of the round metal hooks on the wall, and did she put the handcuffs and the ball gag in her own mouth? And to that he said it was role play, but that they took it too far. He tried to make it seem like Sam was complicit in everything, which they knew, of course, was bullshit. They felt like they were sitting across the table from pure evil. Detective Matucci had a lot of experience in these types of cases, and what he came to find over the years, especially with juries in these types of cases, they think a person should fight and run, and if they don't do that, a lot of times they're not believed. So they were worried that a jury could possibly get this one wrong. There was a lot more information that they needed to find out. At the hospital, Sam mentioned Christopher removed all the hair from his body to avoid DNA detection and had a bad chemical reaction when he did that. And at the police station, when they had him take off his clothes to collect his evidence, they could see the chemical burns all over his body, which was also good. Christopher's arraignment was on October 10th, and he was charged with kidnapping, home invasion, torture, aggravated stalking, and 4 counts of criminal sexual conduct in the first degree. He pled not guilty to all of the charges, which Sam was not surprised about. Thankfully, the judge agreed that there would be no safety for Sam if he were released on bail, so she denied that. Noelle Mogenberg was the head prosecuting attorney in Grand Traverse County. She and the detectives wanted to build the best case they possibly could against him that made him go to jail for as long as possible. But as I said, there was always concern that a jury would believe Christopher's wild story about this role-playing thing. They just hoped a jury would believe Sam, who, thankfully, was extremely believable and had a very long history of telling him no. Police tried to locate the trackers on Sam's car and on her friends' cars, which he denied putting there, even though they found the receipts for them. He even tried saying Sam put the tracker on her own car. Eventually, they found a small hockey puck-sized tracker up underneath the bumper of Sam's car and on the bumper of all the other cars, and they realized that these trackers that he was using only got a few weeks of charge out of them, so he would have to constantly go out of his way to remove them, recharge them, and then put them back all on these vehicles. They served search warrants to the tracker company, which gave them information on exactly what he was looking at. They could see all of the tracking information he had. It looked like when he wasn't sleeping or at work, he was right behind Sam all the time, like 5 minutes away from her at all times. And when they looked through his phone, he had countless photos and videos of her from 10 years worth of stalking. After the restraining order in 2014, Sam's life moved on. But even still, she always felt like she was being watched. And it's because she was. They figured out that Christopher was actually Sarah Mott on Sam's blog. He was also tracking her on Instagram. He had his own Facebook account, which he stalked her on. And he had also somehow gotten into Sam's Facebook account, so he was watching her every move from the inside out. They also caught him on CCTV footage at Menards, which is like a big hardware store, kind of like Lowe's or Home Depot, and other stores where he bought all the things he needed to keep Sam in the bunker. And he spent thousands of dollars to build that bunker. She filed the PPO in July, and it was denied. And directly after that, in August and September, he was building the bunker to keep her in. It seemed like the amount of time and effort he was putting into stalking her and building this box, and at the same time keep a job and act normal, Detective Matucci didn't think that she was going to make it out of that box alive, if she hadn't been so smart and played her cards the way she had. Matucci also contacted some of Christopher's friends, and they told him Christopher was convinced Sam was the one. It also came out that he had been arrested in the past for stalking and harassment. Who is shocked? Probably nobody. 13 years before the kidnapping in 2009, a woman named Kelly was a full-time college student and was working at a residential treatment center, and that was where she met Christopher Thomas. She was stalked and harassed almost the exact same way that Sam was. She ended up getting a PPO, but he would still come around all the time, and she called the cops on him a couple times, which ended up with her pressing charges on him, and he got 24 months of probation and a few days in jail. And instead of changing his behavior, he just found a new victim, aka Sam. Christopher was represented by defense attorney Jesse Williams. The defense wanted to have Christopher evaluated for criminal responsibility, which meant they were basically going for the insanity plea. And if he got that, he would most likely be hospitalized and then released. They had multiple competency evaluations, and each time he was ruled responsible for his actions. His attorney even wanted to get an independent competency exam to compare to the state exam, but they came up with the same conclusion. Turns out he knows the difference between right and wrong. He just chose to do a very evil thing. and now he has to face the consequences. November of 2023, 13 months after the kidnapping, Christopher's attorney called Noelle Mogenberg, and they began talking about what a plea might look like. Christopher's attorney came back a few days later and said he would never admit that he raped her. He said that it was consensual. Despite his attorney's attempts to explain the concept of consent, Christopher wouldn't plead guilty to the criminal sexual assault charges. And Sam felt like a plea deal was a cheap way out for him. Why should he get a free pass at some of the charges just because he didn't understand consent? Noelle Mogenberg told Sam that this was a slam dunk case for them, but if it went to trial, she would be dragged through the mud. They also can think they have an airtight case, but they were risking things by putting it in the hands of a jury. Juries sometimes get things wrong. Dropping criminal sexual conduct charges didn't feel like justice for Sam. She wanted everyone to point at him and to say this person is a rapist. But in the end, she decided to trust Noelle's instincts and go for the plea deal and make him look as awful as they possibly could. In December of 2023, they found out that Kevin Elsenheimer was the judge assigned to the case, who just so happened to be the judge who had denied Sam's second PPO. They didn't know if that would be a good thing, because he'd feel bad for getting it wrong, or if it would be bad for them, because he was clearly already wrong the first time. Christopher did accept the plea deal, and sentencing was set for February 5th, 2024. On one side of the courtroom was Sam and all of her friends and family, and on the other side was Christopher's family. Before the judge would give his sentence, Noelle wanted to make sure the judge heard all of the details of what Sam went through that day, so that he would possibly sentence Christopher outside of the guidelines. Sam also spoke and gave a very powerful victim impact statement. She didn't speak to Christopher. She basically explained how she felt through what she endured and urged the judge to give him the longest sentence permitted by law to keep her and other women safe from Christopher. Christopher also got up to speak, with 3 pages of a speech, but ended up just apologizing to those he had hurt. He didn't read his speech, which I honestly find shocking, but maybe he actually understood that he did something wrong and felt bad about it. One can hope. All that was left at that point was sentencing, and everyone held their breath. Sam had already been let down by that court before. She hoped and prayed that this judge would give him longer than 20 years, because in her eyes, 20 years seemed like nothing. If he got out in 20 years, she would still have to go into hiding and change her name to feel safe. The judge said he felt Christopher wasn't able to be rehabilitated, because he had already been arrested for stalking in the past, and while he was sitting in jail for his crime, he told his mother, who was crying over the phone, over what she could have done to help him, that nothing would have mattered and nothing would have stopped him from doing what he was going to do. And so because of that, the judge sentenced him to 40 to 60 years for the kidnapping charge. He sentenced him outside of the guidelines, so he gave him a longer sentence than he was supposed to have, which was amazing. But hearing that was kind of shocking, because so they had obviously built this whole case and they didn't have to, I guess, fully present it because they didn't go to court, so they could only say so much because Christopher took a plea deal. But the judge did know that Christopher said over the phone to his mother while he was sitting in jail that nothing would have stopped him from doing what he had done. And it was because of that, and probably other things, but it was because of that that he sentenced him 40 to 60 years. I wonder what he would have gotten if he hadn't said that. That one sentence over the phone. Had he not had that conversation with his mother that day, what would his sentence have been? I don't know, and I'm glad we never have to find out, but it's crazy to think about. At the time of sentencing, Christopher Thomas was 39 years old, and the judge gave him 40 to 60 years, so he'd be almost 80 before he had a chance of being released. And the judge said, if for some reason he is released in the future, it would be a requirement that he would have a lifetime GPS so that they would know where he is at all times for the rest of his life, which I thought was a very beautiful cherry on top. That's some poetic justice for you. Sam and her friends and family were very relieved hearing his sentence, because now she could truly be free. She had to grieve the fact that she could never go back to who she was before being kidnapped, but knowing that she is turning the page on this and that she's protected now with him off the street is everything to her. She finally feels free. She didn't picture herself surviving through that day. She lived through something that most people only see in horror films. She also said she had amazing friends and family who helped her along the way. It really does seem like she has an amazing circle of people around her, so I'm really glad that she has that, because that's powerful too. Sam said, quote, "I want other women, whether they've been stalked or sexually assaulted or not believed, I want them to see my story and think things can change." I'm honestly in awe of her. She's so strong. She's so good at communicating. And also, she just seems so cool, which isn't very important to the story, but felt like it could be said. She just seems like someone that would be really easy to, like, hang out with and get along with. And this story hit really close to home for me. Like, I mean, I live in Michigan. I went to school in Michigan, and I've been to Traverse City a couple times. I love it there. And she just feels like someone I already know, you know? So watching her story was just surreal. Dealing with what she went through definitely wasn't easy for her, and she has talked about that a little bit. But as I've said, it seems like she has a really great community of people around her, and she has just a really good head on her shoulders, and she's worked really hard to be where she's at. So I don't know her, but I'm proud of her. And I think that she's done amazing work, and I think she'll continue to do amazing things. So I wish her nothing but the best, from one Michigan girly to another. And I think Christopher is exactly where he needs to be, and I hope he never ever gets out. And I think that's all I have to say about that. But anyway, why don't we have a bit of a palate cleanser so we can go on with our days as normal, and I'll tell you my good thing. My good thing is that I watched Legally Blonde the other day. And I haven't seen it in a long time, but God, I love that movie. But what I love even more than that movie is the Legally Blonde musical. And if you've never seen Legally Blonde the musical, and you're into musicals, I highly recommend you look into it. The full musical is on YouTube, and it's like the actual Broadway recorded version. This is my nerd coming out. You should watch it. That's all I'm saying. It might be my favorite. I watched the movie, and now I have to listen to the entire soundtrack all week, and that's just how it goes when you're a retired theater kid. Not retired. I will always be a theater kid. It is what it is. What can you do? But that's my good thing. Who doesn't love some Elle Woods? But anyway, thank you all so much for listening. If you would like to check out all of our bonus episodes and get all the perks included, head over to patreon.com/nottodaypodcast. If you or anyone you know has a story of survival or something crazy that's happened to you and you'd like to share it with us and possibly hear it on an upcoming listeners episode, send it to notodaypodcast@gmail.com. We post pictures of all the stories we talk about over on Instagram @nottoday_podcast. We have a TikTok that is Not Today Podcast and a Twitter that is Not Today Podcast with a T, and their podcast is a 3 because that makes sense. And just keep breathing. Yeah.